much. Thank you for inviting me here. So this is obviously about what I'm going to talk. But I need to set up some notation and some terminology first. So all trees in this talk will be uniquely rooted, so not boron trees, finitely branching, so every node has finite number of immediate successors, and without maximal nodes. So why I am, of course I will need to deal with finite trees, but I will emphasize each time if my tree is finite or not. And actually, most of the talk will be about this special class of trees. So a tree is homogeneous, I would say that a tree is homogeneous if there is an integer, bt, greater than or equal to 2, called this the branching number of our tree, such that every guy in our tree has exactly bt immediate successors. So every dyadic, triadic tree is homogeneous. And also I need to deal with vector trees. What is a vector tree? Is just a finite, non-empty finite sequence of possibly finite trees having common height. So if I have such a finite sequence, then I can define what is the level product. So it's a subset of the Cartesian product of T1 up to TD. I will denote it this way, which is what, okay, you fix an integer, and then you go to the level n and you take the Cartesian product of the nth level of T1, the nth level of T2, the nth level of T3. So instead of taking the Cartesian product, I'm just taking the Cartesian product of the levels. Okay, so in every mathematical category, there is some notion of substructure. And in the case of trees, okay, every subset of a tree can be seen as a tree, but with the induced partial ordering. But we need to impose extra conditions. So we will work with what is called a strong subtree. So a strong subtree is what? Okay, this needs a picture. So say I have a tree T. So a strong subtree is just a subset, S of T, with the following properties. First of all, this subset is uniquely rooted. So it has a unique root over here. The second thing is that the levels of this subtree are subset of levels of T. So that here you have this root belongs in the TL0 level of T, and then you have the L1 level and so on. So the levels of S are subset of levels of T, and the third condition is the most important one and says the following. Okay, take a node in S. This node has some immediate successors in T. So say our tree is dyadic in order to make our first, to simplify our lives. So this guy here, which is a member of S, has two immediate successors in T. Well, for every immediate successor of this node in S, which they have to be here, so for every guy in here, there is a unique immediate successor of this node in S. So this node splits in T, and the next level of this node in S follows through this path. So it preserves more or less the way the tree is branching. So I'm putting too much conditions, and you might say, okay, I mean, this is a too rigid class of trees, right? But actually, this concept is quite important. I mean, and the reason is important, one of the reasons it's important is because of the following theorem. This is what is called the Halper-Lowry theorem. It has several versions, and this is the strong Sartre version. So what the Halperlaurli theorem is, it's a dimension-dependent result. It depends on the dimension. And it says that whenever, for every integer d, we have this statement, HLD, which means that whenever I take a d tuple of trees, and whenever I color in finitely many colors the level product of these guys, I can always find strong subtrees S1, SD of T1, TD, having common level sets such that the level product of these guys is monochromatic. So what I'm doing? I have D many trees. And I'm taking this subset of the Cartesian product, which is the level product. I'm not copying all tuples, all the members of the Cartesian product, just those who are in the same level. And then I'm coloring this level product into finitely many colors. Then I will always be able to find strong subtrees in here, having common level sets, so that if I take the level product of this object, it's monochromatic. So this result was proved in 1966. It is considered quite deep. And the original, it was discovered because of necessity. It was used to give an example of a model of set theory where the Boolean prime ideal holds, but not the full axiom of choice. And it is, I mean, the pigeonhole principle for trees. And it has several consequences. And let me say one of the most famous one, most probably also the most useful one. It is a result of Milikin, going back to 1979-1981. And it says that the class of strong subtrees, both finite and infinite, okay, if you color infinite objects, then you have to assume that the colors are sufficiently nice, because otherwise you can kill Ramsey by axiom of choice. So you have to restrict attention to colors. If you color infinite objects, you have to restrict attention to colors which are nice. So the class of strong subtrees of a tree T is partition regular. So whenever I say, for instance, I mean, I color all finite strong subtrees of K, K an integer, I can always find a strong subtree, all of whose strong subtrees of K are monochromatic. Okay, this is a very nice result, but the reality is that it's not only nice, but it is extremely powerful. And I would like to explain the reason. Okay, most people, unless you are in combinatorics or in an area closely involved to combinatorics, you will never hear the word strong subtree. But you could work in an area where you do have to deal with trees, and there, of course, you might know what a chain is. A chain of a tree is just a linearly ordered set. I mean, you have a finite number. And of course, this is, in a sense, more natural than what is called a strong subtree. Now, and of course, you might need to color not strong subtrees in a particular situation, but some other shape, whatever that is. Now, the reality is that Milikin's theory actually not only implies, but encompasses and unifies all these results. And I will explain why. I will, instead of listing theorems, I will give an example. And I will give a specific example. So, it goes back to Stern. Just a year before Milikin's theorem, that chains of the dyadic tree are Ramsey. What I mean by that, I mean that if you color all chains of the dyadic tree, either finite or infinite, but again, if you deal with infinite objects, you have to put some restrictions of how the color, if the color is well behaved or not, then you can always find a subtree, all of whose chains are monochromatic. Now, okay, we know how to color strong subtrees, we have this, but we don't know how to color chains. So I will explain how this result implies this result. And there is a methodology behind. I want to emphasize the methodology. So the first remark is that actually this when you do this Ramsey business, then if you color or change the monochromatic object, the tree that you will get from Ramsey, is not necessarily strong. And there is a very simple combinatorial reason why this can happen. Okay, look what you do. You are in the dyadic tree, and so you are given a chain. So color the chain red if it happens that the first node in the chain has the property that the second node of the chain has the property that it extends the first one with zero. And color it green otherwise. Now, in every strong subtree, I can find chains of this form and of this form. So I cannot expect to find a monochromatic, the subtree that I'm going to get from Ramsey, I cannot expect to, it is not possible to be strong because of this disturbance. But, okay, I'm claiming that this result implies this result. Okay, let us see why. Okay, so you have a strong subtree. Okay, this strong subtree has a lot of chains, right? Too many. But there are two distinguished ones, the leftmost and the rightmost, okay? So let us pick the leftmost. Okay, and now I have a coloring for chains, and I will color strong subtrees. How? Okay, I'm taking a strong subtree, I'm picking the leftmost branch. I say, okay, which is the color of this leftmost branch? And this will be the color of the strong subtree, okay? Now, I'm using, of course, it is not the case that every chain is the leftmost branch of a strong subtree. Okay, the rightmost, for instance, is not, trivially. But I can apply this particular result to this coloring of strong subtrees and get a strong subtree, all of whose strong subtrees are monochromatic. And now I'm doing the following thing. This is well known. So let S be the monochromatic strong subtree given by Millikan's theorem. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to choose a particular subtree. I'm going to take the first node, and then I will not take no node from the first level. I will skip it, and I will go, remember the discrepancy. I had 0 or 1. I will follow just a path. I will go to this node, and it will take its successors, and it continue forever. The tree I'm getting is a dyadic subtree, is not strong, but it has the property that whenever you take a chain in here, it appears as the leftmost branch of a strong subtree in the big one. So, roughly speaking, what is the methodology? How you get Ramsey properties for various shapes of trees using Millikan's theorem? First, once you have a certain shape, you embed it in a canonical way, this particular shape might have a lot of embeddings in a strong subtree. You pick the leftmost one, you use this embedding to color strong subtrees, and then you refine in order to arrive to a tree so that every shape in there appears as the leftmost branch of a strong subtree. So this is a general fact. So basically what I want to say, up to this point, is that the notion of the strong subtree, Pascal Perlaveli, gives us Millikan, and basically this can be used to establish the Ramsey property of almost every natural class of subtrees you would like to color. Okay, and this is more or less, the history about the coloring business. So what's the problem now? Okay, this is now something that goes back to the beginnings of Ramsey theory. It was basically started with Ardos and Turan. So whenever you have a pigeonhole principle, which is something, a coloring result, then you would like to have a density result, saying that whenever the coloring result says that whenever I color, whenever I partition my object into finitely many pieces, then one of the pieces contains a substructure. Now the density result says that whenever I take any large subset of my structure, then necessarily this particular piece will have to contain a substructure. There are several well-known theorems in this direction. I mean, for me at least, the archetypical example, of course it's not the most recent one, but the archetypical example is Hildreth, density Hildreth, proved by Fustenberg and Kaltlesen. So you have the chromatic and the density result. So, of course, these are well-known facts, and once the Halper-Lowry were discovered, I mean, and people starting to realize what's going on with this result, okay, they are posing questions. And the natural problem whether Halper-Lowry has a density version was asked first by Richard Laver in the late 1960s, who actually conjectured that there is such a version. So I will explain what kind of density notion I will use in the next slide. And Stevo told us that the problem was circulated among experts in the area, and it was explicitly stated in 1983 by Bicker and Voigt in a special issue of Combinatorica for the 70th birthday of Erdos, whether Halper-Lowry has a density version. There is an explicit conjecture there, but it was, of course, asked before. And another thing that Bicker and Voigt did was they made two quite important remarks. The first is that if you want to have some kind of density version of Halper-Lowry, then you have to restrict attention to the category of homogeneous trees. So you have to consider trees so that every node has a fixed number of immediate successors. They also saw that if you just in dimension one, the conjecture is true. But of course this is encouraging, but in this kind of results, the difficulty arises once the dimension grows. And the answer is yes. This is joint work with Vasilis Kanelopoulos and Nikos Karagiannis. And here is the result. Okay. For every positive integer D, we have the density Halper-Lowry defaults. This means that whenever we have a D tuple of homogeneous trees, and whenever we take a subset of the level product with the property that for infinitely many levels, the cardinality of our set in this corresponding level product is at least epsilon times the cardinality of the whole level product. Okay, this is the usual density condition. It says simply that our D in the nth level product is bigger than, its cardinality is bigger than some epsilon times the cardinality of the whole level product. And I want this to be for infinitely many levels. Then necessarily there exist strong subtrees S1 SD of T1 to D having common level set so that the level product of S1 SD is a subset of D. So some remarks. First of all, and this appears to be the first result in density Ramsey theory where we the monochromatic object, we have a density condition and the object we're getting is infinite. Not a sequence of finite objects of arbitrarily large cardinality, but just an infinite object. The second remark is that, of course, the proof shows why we have to deal with homogeneous trees. Basically, we have to deal with homogeneous trees because we need to have some a priori estimates for some numbers. So a homogeneous tree is similar to its strong subtree. It's the same tree, right? A strong subtree of a dyadic subtree is again a dyadic subtree. But if you take an arbitrarily finitely branching tree, you take one of its strong subtrees, it's not the same. The other thing I would like to point out is that, the difficulty of this result is growing. This will become apparent afterwards as d goes to infinity. And the first critical, we have three proofs of d equals 1. We have two proofs for d equals 2. And the proof is for d equals 3 and afterwards. So the critical threshold, if you want to prove it, you will not see it in low dimensions. You have to go to a dimension higher. I want to sketch the proof. Of course, the proof proceeds by induction on the dimension. And it's combinatorial. In particular, at the process of establishing this result for D for the next dimension, we use as pigeonhole principles the previous established result as well as Halper-Lowry. And actually, you can actually compute which instance of Halper-Lowry you need. And dimension, exactly. We know exactly what dimension of Halper-Lowry we need. And this is just to say that how tight up the proof is, I mean. And so which is the strategy? So suppose that we have established the result for the dimension D, and we are given a tuple of homogeneous tree. So this is D plus 1 tuple. I'm splitting the first D and I'm leaving W alone. These are all homogeneous trees. There is a constant epsilon between 0 and 1. And we have a subset of the level product so that for infinitely many levels, its cardinality is greater than or equal epsilon times this one. Okay? And I will write as boldface T the vector tree of the first D many trees. Okay. So the first step is relatively easy and quite classical. You do Fubini. You do Fubini and you say that if you do Fubini in the previous case, you will be able to establish to find a vector stroke subtree S of T such that for every guy in the level product of this S, if you look at the section of D at this particular S, this will be a subset of W, is a large subset of the corresponding level of W. It's a large set. So this is basically Fubini and applying the previous pigeonhole principle. Okay? So now I will this property of this section mat will be abstracted as follows. Okay. I have some constant epsilon, I have a vector homogeneous tree of d many trees, and I have another homogeneous tree, and I will say that a map that goes from the level product of this vector tree to subset of W is an epsilon dense level selection. If there exists a strictly increasing sequence in n, so that for every n and every guy in the nth level product, the cardinality, this set is a subset of WLn of cardinality of density epsilon. So let me draw a picture. So I have I take an arbitrary element here in the level product, a guy in there, and this have an assignment D will give me a subset in here. This is some S belonging to the nth level product of S, and here is WLn. This particular member will give me a subset of this level, which has density at least epsilon, a large subset of this level. Okay? So, okay, this is, okay, so look, this is a homogeneous tree. So this is a natural metric space. It has a natural measure, right? You can think of it as a Cantor set. So if you take a subset of this level, you can look at all these branches who pass through this set. And because the cardinality of this set is epsilon, this means that the measure of the corresponding set is at least epsilon. So what you basically you are having, you're, so for each element of the level product, you are assigning a measurable event in a probability space whose measure is at least epsilon. Okay? This is what you are doing. And the index set is a Ramsey space. This is critical. Okay, the goal. What we want to do. The goal is to find a vector strong subtree here. I want to refine so that if I look, the events indexed by the level product of the red one are mutually correlated, probabilistically correlated. Okay, why do we expect to find such an object, right? Is there any particular reason why? And I will give you a very simple, but I believe quite important example. This is a very easy fact, but it is very important. So, okay, suppose that I have a probability space, and I'm taking a family of measurable events in this probability space, and these events are indexed by the integers. And suppose further that I know that the measure of each event is at least epsilon. Okay, give me some k, an integer k. Then for every positive delta, as small as I wish, I can find an infinite subset of the integers so that whenever I take any subset of L, the measure of the intersection of these events is at least epsilon to the k minus delta. And this is sharp because the events could have been independent. If they are independent, you can do better. So this gives us a very basic combinatorial, if you want, slash probabilistic principle. If we are given a family of measurable events in a probability space, and we are allowed to refine, to pass the subsequence, then we can always do as if the sequence of events were at least as correlated as if they were independent. They will intersect more, but at least that. Now, here we have a similar scenario. Though our family of events is not indexed by the integers, is indexed by what? By the level product of some trees. And what we basically, the heart of the proof is to establish the corresponding result when the family of events is indexed by a Ramsey space. This would be the ultimate goal of it. This would imply everything. But okay, but for this particular Ramsey space, okay? And I will say which is the theorem. Okay. What we find, I mean, this needs some explanation because as it stands, it's a little bit incomprehensible. I have an inductive proof, so I'm assuming the previous principle, okay? I have an inductive proof, so I'm sure I will use actually this in the proof. So we're using the previous pigeonhole twice. I mean, Spiros Argyros says that if you use the same principle twice in a proof, that the proof is wrong. I don't know if this is the case here. But I don't know. I mean, we cannot find another way. Maybe the theory will find, I guess. Okay. Okay. So we are having, what is the scenario? We are assuming this principle, and we are getting some epsilon, a vector tree, a vector homogeneous tree, and a W homogeneous tree, and a dense level selection. So we're in the same shape, right? What we will be able to find? We will be able to find First of all, the vector strongs are 3 out of SO. Okay, this vector T has a root. And this root goes through D to a subset. Okay, I will be able to find a vector, a node W in the image of this root. And now I will also be able to find a constant, theta. Let me have my constant here because I need it. With the following property. Take any strong subtree in here with the same root as R. Say the trees are dyadic. Okay. Take the first level of this tree. Take any immediate successor of this W in W. Take the level product of these guys, move them with D, and calculate the measure of the intersection below W. This will be theta, independent of the choice of the immediate successor and independent of the choice of the tree. Why this result is difficult? Okay, so say we are having D sets in here, right? D trees. Okay, this is dyadic, so I have two nodes in here. Two nodes, two nodes, two nodes, right? So which is the cardinality of the level product? 2 to the D. So the number of sets in this intersection increases exponentially with respect to dimension. So I have established the previous one. If I go to the next one, I will not just have to add 2. I have to control the intersection of 2 to the D plus 1 objects. The number of sets in this intersection increases exponentially with respect to dimension. And this is why it's a difficult inductive proof. Actually, you can think of the following scheme of the proof. So let us call this property star D. Star D. So star D is a stronger thing than DHLD. It's above. It's much stronger. And you have to establish a stronger property in dimension D in order to climb up D plus 1. Some more remarks. First of all, I said that I can find an OW in here. Actually, not just one. Almost all, I will find a strong set. These are almost all nodes in here will do the job. This is expected, okay? Because almost all guys will do it, but with a different constant. And natural problem. Which is this constant? What is this theta? I don't know. I will come back to it at the end of my talk. The way we have presented this result, the proof, it says, okay, we argue by contradiction. But suppose this is not true and blah, 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 you will do something, you will get something quite nasty. The reality is that the proof is a greedy algorithm. So you say, okay, I'm taking this level. Is this node okay? No, if it is not, then I will check the next one with another constant. So you exhaust everything, and at the very end, if you exhaust everything and you haven't found a node, then you will get to something which is quite bad, and you get the contradiction. So it's a greedy algorithm. It's not written like that, but it can be written in this way. The point is that as you do this greedy algorithm, you have at each step changed this constant theta. Because you have to have you leave your remerum, because you need to find a constant. And at the end step of the greedy algorithm, you will use a different constant. But unfortunately, we don't know when this procedure stops. So So we cannot really say which is this constant. So once we have this, I mean, we call it correlation result because this is just the generalization of this basic principle of measurable event index by integers, right? Once you have this correlation result, then you can perform an inductive construction in order to find a vector strong subtree of these guys whose level product is a subset of this, and this establishes the next step. I would say, okay, I mean, for people familiar with these constructions, I mean, they could follow, but I think that there is some nice argument there, because you don't actually construct the trees V1, VD, but you construct a chain in here with special properties, and then somehow you unfold things and you get it. So very roughly, this is the idea of the proof. So this is, you are taking a subset of the level product, you use the previous principle to reduce the case of the family of events index by vector tree, and then you establish a correlation result general, and then you use it in a recursive construction in order to get the infinite objects. I mean, you have to stabilize something and then proceed. This is the difficulty. Okay. Standard thing, via compactness, we can have a finite version of density hyperlapli. So let me explain what this means. I should probably leave this shape. I need it. So if you don't want to find infinite trees and you just need some finite, then you don't need to have a subset of infinite trees. Okay, so that formally, so say we're working with dyadic trees. Okay, so for every d, for every epsilon, and for every k, there is some constant. And the best one will be denoted by density Hyperlapli number of depending on d, epsilon, and k, so that whenever I have d many dyadic subtrees of height capital N greater than or equal than N naught, and I have on each level a set with density epsilon, then I can always find strong subtrees of height k contained in the set. So typical thing. The best constant is our density Ramsey number. Obvious question, give explicit upper bounds for the corresponding density Hyperlapli numbers. Although this result is weaker than the previous one, because the previous one is infinite and you cannot get finite from infinite, the reduction of this result via compactness is non-effective, so we cannot really say something about these numbers. In fact, if you want to find upper bounds for these numbers, the problem of finding upper bounds for these numbers is closely related to the problem of getting explicit now lower numbers for the theta in the correlation result. So upper bounds for this more or less gives you lower bounds for theta. But I claim that although upper bounds for this density Hyperlapli numbers gives estimations for theta, it's not the other way around. And most likely, the problem of getting explicit lower bounds for the density Hyperlapli numbers will be very difficult. And I want to explain why. Okay, I said before this is the shape that I'm going to use. I said before that there is this greedy algorithm, right? Okay, so suppose that I want to check whether, or what really you have to do, you have to finitize the correlation result. You have at your disposal finite Ramsey results, you have bounds for that, you are happy. So you perform this greedy algorithm. So you start, say, for this route. You go in here, and you pick a node. Okay, you say, is this node nice or not? If it is not nice, then you will refine in here so that, in a finite step, so that everything behaves badly with respect to this guy. So you exhaust this level. Okay? Now, in this kind of refinement, the second level, the first second level of this tree will be far, it might be far away. And then, of course, because this is dense level selection, the number of points then you have to check increases. So what you really have to do, you have to, if you want something monochromatic of KK, you have to ensure that the second level is not too far away. So that the level, the real level of the monochromatic, the second level of the monochromatic object has to be controlled by the height of the monochromatic tree. And this is Paris-Harrington. You cannot finitize. You need the Ramsey's theorem of this sort. We know you cannot do it. If you want to finitize this proof, you need something like Paris-Harrington, and it doesn't exist. So our proof is really infinitary. Experience can show, because this is not the only result in density Ramsey theory. This is not, of course, the first one. The most well-known is multidimensional Zelmeridian density Hale-Jewett. The numbers there are not uniformly primitive recursive. So as the number, for instance, say you are in Hale-Jewett and you have K letters, the density Hale-Jewett numbers, the lower bounds, are of the form 1 over K Thackerman. So there is some substality there. But I'm claiming that this correlation constant will be better behaved. And why? So what we have? So for any integer K, an integer B, there is another integer, PKB, with the following property. Again, we have a homogeneous tree with branching number B, so say a dyadic tree. And we have now a family of measurable events of a probability space, but now this family of measurable events is indexed by R3, not the integers, R3. All of these events have measure greater or equal than epsilon. Then if you give me, okay, the case fixed, if you give me any positive delta, small as you wish, I can always pass to a strong subtree, so in a nice substructure, so that whenever I take a subset in there of cardinality K, the measure of the corresponding event is greater than equal epsilon to the PKB. So it's exponential lower bounds. And actually, not only that, the integer can be chosen to be 4 to the K minus 1 times B. So it's exponentially also dependence on K and B. You cannot really avoid this B, I think. Why? Because if you could do this without the B, this means more or less that you don't deal with the Ramsey space. This is only probability, but this is not only probability. This is also combinatorics. This is Ramsey theory. So this B, more or less, codes in a quantitative way the structure you are dealing with. I don't know if we can get here polynomial dependence on KB. This is probably difficult. Oh, yes, this can be improved. Much better. But the point here is that I'm taking an arbitrary subset of cardinality K, an arbitrary one. So you see, in chains, you can improve, or in various other states. Because chains, more or less, you reduce to the case where you have the integers. But here, you can take any set, any subset, and then you can have this uniform lower bound independent of the choice of the subset. So this is why we believe that this, and of course this is very much closely related to the correlation theta, this constant, right? More or less we're saying that for a case of a single tree, this constant is epsilon to this number. I should say that this is joint work with Vasilis Kanellopoulos and Kostas Stiros, a young PhD student. No, this is Nikos Karagiannis was, this is another one. Okay, so I think that I will probably stop here, Amin. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have plenty of time for questions. Comments?
Yeah.
You said that the proof was different for D equal to 2 work.
Yeah. I said that we have different proofs as the dimension grows. So for D equals 1, we have 3. For D equals 2, we have 2. For D equals 3, we have 1, and that's it for the moment.
Or you still have 1.
Yeah. It stabilizes. it's increasing. It's decreasing. And it stabilizes 1. Yes, of course. Basically, this is what you do. You start with D equals 1. You find the proof. Try to generalize. You could not. You refine the proof for D equals 1. You do it for 2. Works. You are happy. Try to generalize. This is... try to survive.
Well,
yes.
Obvious question and actual suggestion.
Yes.
For example, the most natural way to apply, we take the random graph. So you have some subset bit of light density and some inertion, and you're going to find a copy of the random graph. There's all of these, all the clicks.
Yes. Yes, I understand your point. I mean, as you understand, this is relatively new work. I mean, we are just beginning to understand. At the moment, we care about constants because we want to understand everything. There are, of course, I would say, which is my probably the favorite problem, if you want. I mean, I think that, okay, there are too many results now, quite deep ones in density Ramsey theory. Of course, you have density Hill-Joint, and you have now density Halper-Lowley, and they have a guy on top. I mean, and this would be a density version of infinite Hill-Joint for less valuable words. Carlson-Simpson, Carlson lemma. Density version of Carlson's lemma. So we know that infinite Hill-Joint, density infinite, exists. It's correct. We know infinite Halper-Lowley. It's correct. And then we have to deal with words where the variable is on top. And this, of course, would unite and unify not only Hill-Joint with Zemeredi, but with multidimensional Zemeredi, everything. And another reason, okay, of course, there are applications to combinatorics, I would say, but another reason why I'm emphasizing this infinite, because on the back of my head, I have application. I have things. I think that this thing will be used in balanced space theory. Probably.
Do you know? Do you have a density version of Milligan?
What do you mean, Milligan? Which one?
Well.
Ah, Milligan. No. No, it's false. You can cook up Calder examples, even for 2, for H2. I will tell you the Calder example. Okay, Halper-Lowley, it's product, it's not rectangular. So do the following thing. Take all, you are in the adiadic tree. If you do it in the dyadic tree, then you have it for everywhere. Okay, you have a strong subtree of H2. Okay, look at these nodes. If they end up in different digits, put it in your set. Otherwise, don't put it. So I'm having two strings like that. If you visualize trees as, I guess, growing upwards, so I have this strong subtree of H2. These two nodes end to some digits. If these digits are both 0, you don't put it. If the digits are both 1, you don't put it. If they are different, you put it. This thing has density 1 over 4 in any possible way, but it is impossible to find a strong subtree, all of whose say pairs are monochromatic. This is actually related to other counterexamples. This is probably quite related to other things. But this is impossible. I don't see. I mean, if someone can have something, I mean, and bypass this counterexample and produce a density of Millikan theorem, I would be very, very glad to hear. The real problem is the following, that Millikan, you can get Ramsey from Millikan, trivially. You can get Ramsey for Millikan. And you cannot have density for Ramsey. There is no natural version, density version of Ramsey's theorem for doubletons. This is the real problem. That you can always code finite sets. I mean, where the level set is gives you a finite set. And of course, if you had a density Millikan, you would have a density Ramsey for doubletons or K tuples. And this is false. And this is the deepest reason. I think that, of course, this doesn't exclude the possibility of having other type of results, right? For other shapes, exactly. And not only that, it doesn't exclude the possibility that, okay, we are dealing the obvious thing. I mean, this someone has to do. Okay, this someone has to do it. Okay, we are dealing with level products. Okay, do it for skew level products. With probability one, it's correct. Another thing, I mean, it's what else? I mean, I like these numbers, by the way. I think that the problem of getting... I'm sorry, but... Yes. I think that the problem of getting explicit lower bounds for a density Halper-Lowley, it will be fruitful. It will be fruitful. I mean, if you look, and another thing, of course, we have at a point we have to understand how we will deal not with a specific Ramsey class, but we will say, okay, I have a measuring family of measurable events indexed by some Ramsey space, and then I will be able to find a substructure, all measurements and a substructure, so that for all one-step approximations, the measure is greater than that. Of course, this problem, if your structure, for instance, is the word, is density Hilgert, is equivalent to density Hilgert. And one-step approximations are lines. And we don't know the lower bound, if the lower bound is primitive recursive with respect to the number of colors and the epsilon. In this, okay, by the way, I mean, the previous talk with the Bolan trees, there was a very nice shape. You didn't notice it. I mean, this kind of shapes, I mean, gives you these results. And generalizations of it. Basically, how you do this thing, I mean, you need a different proof, so more or less you make a tree version of Sella line and generalizations of it, and you do it by induction. So you need to have some more effective argument, more geometric argument, rather than just a greedy algorithm. You understand what I'm saying? So far, we have a greedy algorithm, more or less. So you need some more geometric arguments in order to get better estimates. So you have to hit your head on the wall, basically. This is, and come up with something which is reasonable. This is included. Okay. This is included. I mean, Blass theorem follows from Millikan. This is also, I replied more or less to that. I have a counterexample that for any natural notion of density I can think of, this counterexample will work again.
Are there questions or comments? All right, if not, let's thank Andreas again.
Thank you.